Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
You're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Victor Benitez, Interim Manager for the Labs at DC Public Library. On today's show, I'm joined by Jean Badalamenti, Health and Human Services Coordinator, and the Library's Peer Outreach Specialists, Jerome and Renee. Welcome, you guys. Say hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Great. On today's Notes from the Library show, we'll be speaking about the Library's efforts in assisting DC's most vulnerable and at-risk residents. Jean, let me start with you. Maybe you can help us unpack these terms, vulnerable and at-risk residents. What might that mean?
Right. So as the Health and Human Services Coordinator at the Library, I am focused on, one of the things I'm focused on is how the public library can better support people experiencing homelessness, at risk of homelessness, folks who might be experiencing mental health disorders, substance abuse, and how we can get folks connected with services and just support them in their lives.
Okay. Jean, how long have you been in this position at the library?
I came to DCPL in May of 2014, and I was the first social worker hired for DC Public Library, and I have a MSW from Howard University.
That's sweet. So being the first person who was hired in this position, and you seem to oversee a lot of different things. What does a typical day for you look like?
Well, it's definitely varied. So, as I said, I was brought on with a real focus on how the library could better support people experiencing homelessness. And I've done a variety of things to make that happen. And we can talk about that with Jerome and Renee, but I also manage our library at the DC jail. We have a library service there. We provide mobile book service to half of the DC jail, and we have a walk-in library, and there are three staff, a librarian, a library associate, and a tech there. And I manage that branch in the partnership with our Department of Corrections. So I'm working on that and a whole variety of other things.
It's a lot on your plate, Jean.
Yeah.
Well, let's introduce Jerome and Renee, who are here with us. Do you guys want to just share a little bit more about yourselves?
Well, my name is Jerome, and I'm a returning citizen to the District of Columbia. I was incarcerated for 5 years in federal penitentiary. when I came home, I was using the library services at Martin Luther King, where I met you when you were doing coffee and conversation.
That's right.
Which was a big part of my recovery. I was thrilled when I was hired by Jean to work outreach for the libraries, the first for the library in the District of Columbia. And my day is basically spent facilitating ways in which our homeless population can step up.
Okay.
By that I mean if they're on the street, to get them into a shelter, if they're in the shelter, to try to get them into transitional housing or permanent supportive housing. Most of the people that I see are dealing with substance abuse and mental health issues, which I myself dealt with. So it's like helping myself all over again. I'm thrilled to do it.
Thank you, Jerome.
Hi, my name is Renee, and I came through the library in May of this year. My day-to-day routine is I go to two different libraries a day, and I do the same as Jerome. I help people with getting documentation, try to get influence them and encourage them to go into treatment if they need be, seek mental health. If they are working with some issues, I try to convince them that they need to go into, you know, try to get their life in order and to get them on the path of living a normal, well, quote-unquote normal life, what we think is a normal life. So that's what we basically what I do.
Yeah. Thank you, Renee. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we should back up a little bit and talk about the different sort of issues that DC residents who might be vulnerable to being homeless or are experiencing homelessness already, what kind of issues are they facing here in the city? And maybe you can start us out, Jean.
Right, so a lot of folks, you know, I think people ask, well, why would the library want to bring on staff like Jerome and Renee and then right. Ellery, who's not with us today, but also a peer outreach specialist. Why would they want to do something like this? You know, the library is a place that people come to do all kinds of things, you know, search the internet, look for jobs, read, gather with people they know, make copies, use the bathroom. It's a whole variety of things. And when you're experiencing homelessness, there are very few options of places you can go during the day, especially as our city is gentrifying. You know, the library is a place where you can go to without having ID and having to buy something, where you can get warm on cold days, you can cool off on hot days.
Yeah,
yeah, and so it really, you know, it makes a lot of sense that the library is providing support to people to help them through their journey of homelessness. And so the DCPL was the second library to bring on a social worker, but the library system to bring on a social worker. But we were the third system to, I believe, through in the country to hire peer outreach specialists. And I can talk a little bit about what that is and how that came to be.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in how did you have this idea of bringing on peer outreach specialists?
Well, one of the things I had been working on is how to create some partnerships with other service providers who are experts in homeless services in the city. And, you know, reached out to a bunch of different nonprofit organizations, all of whom are doing tons of work and really, you know, maxed out on serving people and taking more people on. And so finally, a couple of years ago, I started having conversations with the DC Department of Behavioral Health to see if we could partner somehow to bring in people to connect with customers at our branches. And I was really excited when the Department of Behavioral Health had some funding through a federal grant from the Substance Health and Administration, SAMHSA, and they had some funding, but then they also have this great certified peer program where they train people with lived experience with co-occurring disorders and train them to support people in the community. And maybe Jerome and Renee, you can talk a little bit about what that program is, but that's how we came to bring Jerome and Renee and Ellery into the library to do this
yeah.
work.
Well, how did you guys first hear about this position that the library was doing, and what made you interested in being a part of it?
Well, first, my therapist recommended me for the peer outreach program. He thought I would be a good fit for the program. So I went up and interviewed, was accepted, went through the curriculum, finished that. And several weeks later, I was hired at the treatment facility at the DC jail. So I went to work there. Subsequent to that, while working there, I got another email saying that the DC Public Library was interested in peer specialists to come on board to do outreach for them. So I submitted my resume. Jean called me. We did the interview, and she hired me. So it's really been an interesting time for me to think that my experience, the bad side of my life, is useful to people today, that I can use those experiences that I had to turn my life around and to assist people in turning their own situation around.
How about you, Renee?
I came through peer specialists through a day program. I was in a mental health day program. And I did a lot of talking to the young ladies in the program and helping them, you know, try to put their life in order. And one of the facilitators was doing a class, and he thought I was a good fit for the class. And then I submitted my paperwork to get into the DBA program. I completed that and became a peer specialist. Then I did a lot of volunteering. I volunteered a lot. Then I got a call from one of the ladies at DBH, and she told me about meeting with Jean, and did an interview with Jean, and here I am. And I think that what makes it so good for me is because I've been homeless. I've been in mental health. Yeah. I was an addict for 15 years. So, and that gives people a comfortability with me when they meet me in the library, because I've been there with it, and I can understand where they're trying to go. Right. And I'm here to help them.
Yeah, no, I've had the opportunity to see both of you in action, and it is something else to say that you're a peer, that you have similar experiences to some of our customers, where a lot of our customers, I think, want to feel a sort of connection with someone, mm-hmm. and maybe sometimes library staff don't provide that. You guys come in and are able to do that from the very beginning.
And plus, we understand where
right.
they're at.
Yeah, yeah, understand. You have that understanding, yeah. and you've navigated that system in some way or another.
That's one of the primary tenets of being a peer specialist, is that you're able to model good behavior. You're able to model recovery, your lifestyle, and be able to talk about it in a way that draws people in, that allows them to feel, to have that empathy with them, that you understand where they are and where they're trying to get to.
Yeah. You mentioned a curriculum, mm-hmm. having to go through a curriculum or a course. Mm-hmm. What was that like? Or what did that consist of?
Well,
it was intense.
It was intense.
Right. It was a 6-week course, 5 days a week. And then after the 6 weeks, you do a 80-hour internship at a community support agency. I did mine at CPAP.
Okay.
And
I'm sorry, what is CPAP?
It's the psychiatric emergency whatever.
Institute.
Yeah. But over at DC General.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's where people are taken for a 72-hour hold to evaluate them to see if they need further treatment. So I did my internship there. And then from there, I went to volunteer, as Renee was saying. I volunteered still at Whitman Walker Health, where I facilitate two groups. The volunteerism is very important, I think, for peers, to be able to give and not receive monetarily,
right.
but to have that feeling that you're still able to do something beneficial for your community. So the training, even though it was 6 weeks, for me, it went by very quickly.
Yeah, it went by quick.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. So you said you've had experience facilitating.
Mm-hmm.
What's that been like for you?
I facilitate one group at Whitman Walker, and I have a one-on-one twice a week.
Okay.
So it's The one-on-one I find to be more to my liking. The group is good, but I tend to be more at ease one-on-one. Mm-hmm. So if I had a preference, that would be the one I enjoy most.
Right. Well, you've helped me facilitate a coffee and conversation. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've saved me several times when like conversations have gone quiet or there's like tricky things that mm-hmm. you have to navigate. Mm-hmm. You've really been very helpful
in helping me with that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very good at talking. Very good.
So I guess we're talking about the library and the services that we do. Mm-hmm. But something you said earlier, Jean, being the public library, people of every background come and use our services. Yeah, you're right. Some people might argue that why is the library doing this? Well, it's mainly because people are there. And like the library being public and being a public institution is a reflection of what's happening in the city. Mm-hmm. What might be some of the options that people have in navigating the issues that they're having or experiencing right now? Maybe we should start out with, say you're someone who's homeless now and you're here in the city. What might be a first step for you?
Well, I think
first of all, we need to find out if they have all the documents. Okay. They need documentation. A lot of people don't have an ID. Okay. So we make sure they get documentations, ID, birth certificates, social security cards. And I think the best option right now is to try to get them into a shelter.
Okay.
That's one of the main things. They're trying to get them off the street and see if they can start living what is, you know, sort of a normal routine and get them on a routine.
Especially since it's cold.
Yes.
That's right, one of our main focuses is to get people into shelter if they're staying on the street.
Right. Then another thing is that by us being a part of mental health and being into the drug life once before, so we kind of can recognize certain things that maybe other people working in the library don't see, that we know that this person has a drug issue of some sort, and try to get them persuaded into going into a treatment center or go and get them some mental health help.
So, Renee, you mentioned helping people with their documentation. What might be some of the barriers or challenges that people face in getting a simple ID or maybe like tracking down their social security number? Being on the reference desk, I've helped people do this, and it's quite challenging.
Well, some people are from out of state.
Okay.
That's one of the main barriers. But if they're here in the district, it's really not too much of an issue of getting. It's just to get them to go and to get it. That's the that's the most barrier.
Do you think some of our customers are just fearful of having to show up and request it, or is it something else?
I think what I've experienced is some of the consumers who have been rebuffed by society so much that they're just hesitant to go downtown, so to speak, to deal with the people who they have to deal with in order to take care of their business. So we go with them if we sense that would be necessary, that they have some kind of resistance. And the resistance is not that they don't know where it is or how to say what they want, but the resistance is they just don't want to deal with having to be put down.
Yeah. Okay.
So in that case, we go with them. We sort of hold their hand through the process. I just had a young man who went from the shelter into transitional program, and he was kind of resistant to going where he needed to go. Not because he didn't know, this guy has 2 years of college, but he has been beat down so much that he just felt a little better if I went along with him. So it was no problem. You know, that's what we're there for. Secondarily, though, as Renee said, if people are from out of town, that creates a greater obstacle, because then we have to deal with the out-of-state birth certificate.
Right.
Social Security is not that hard, but okay. The birth certificate is getting mm-hmm. that birth certificate is very hard out-of-state. Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time.
Yes.
There's a financial cost, and you know, there's some great partners in the community that help us out.
Yeah.
Foundry United Methodist Church has a great program, which we rely on a lot to help people get.
DHS has a great program.
Right, and DHS to help people get IDs.
So I guess I'm curious about when you're at the library, either of you, what are some of the strategies that you employ? You, Renee, you mentioned being able to have like an extra sense, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some of the techniques or strategies that you use when you think or might think that someone needs help? Is it a self-voluntary? Like, do they volunteer on their own, or do you directly reach out to them?
Well,
we make an announcement that we are there, and on a normal basis, they volunteer on their own. Then we have library staff that can recognize homelessness, and you know, by the library staff seeing them every day, they know who frequents a lot and kind of like know some of the issues, and they will point out somebody to us.
And also word of mouth. Those folks who have been helped tell their friends,
mm-hmm.
this is who helped me. I've had several consumers bring their friends. You need to talk to Mr. Thomas. You need to go and do this. You need to tell him what you need to get done. So that word of mouth is very important as it permeates through the homeless community.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we also talked about shelters and the importance of getting into a shelter right now while it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
You can speak, Jean, about the hypothermia alerts. What is that?
Right. So when the temperature reaches a certain degree, it was
32.
I think it's changed. There's precipitation. I don't know the details. But that you have a right to shelter. So that means that the city must provide a shelter bed for you or a space to be if you need it on hypothermia alert nights. And the city calls hypothermia alerts, and then there's transportation available. You can call 311 if you know that someone is in need of transportation to a shelter. And then the DHS that has shelter vans that will transport people from different locations, any location in the city, to a shelter during a hypothermia alert.
Okay. Is there an equivalent to the summer months or like
yes.
a heat advisory?
Yes,
there's hypothermia. And the shelters do open up when it is. I'm not sure of the details of when that happens, but the shelters will open up if there's consistent heat waves.
Okay.
Where,
but will it be similarly as in hypothermia, where there's the right to the shelter or the?
You know, I don't.
That's a good question.
That's a great question. I don't
we'll
think so.
Out.
Right, but they will open up early.
Okay.
Shelters will open up early. They'll
they
open
have
up
cooling
cooling centers.
Centers, yes.
And many of the libraries are cooling
right.
centers.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the District of Columbia Federal Building district buildings
okay.
are used as cooling centers as well.
Yeah. So let's get more into I guess the process of getting into a shelter. What is that like? Or are there requirements? Are there differences if you are a family or if you have kids or if you might have a mental illness?
Well, Renee and I only work with single men and women.
Okay.
And there's no great difficulty in getting to the shelter. Getting into the shelter, you just show up.
Okay.
You show up at the appointed time, which is like 5 p.m. in the evening, and you wait in line. You go in, you sign up. They assigned you a bed. And if you're there consecutively, that bed is yours. but you have to adhere to the rules and the regulations of the shelter. You can't, you know, be causing any confusion because you can lose your spot. Okay. So, but there's no great obstacle to that.
Unless the shelters fall, and then
they will transport you.
Yeah, they transport you to a different location. Right. If you're a family, the city does all intake at the Virginia Williams Center on Rhode Island Avenue. That's where they have one central location where families need to go to do an intake. And now...
Some also has
family shelter as well.
Mm-hmm. And some is so others
so
might
others
eat.
So others may eat.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And the families are now, the DC General Family Shelter has closed, and there are now, the city is opening
smaller shelters. In all 8 wards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are those already open or in the process?
Most of them
are open.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So we also, you mentioned earlier substance abuse and addiction. Mm-hmm. What are some resources or strategies or ways that we can help customers who might be facing addiction?
The young men and women who I talk to, who I know or who they tell me they're experiencing substance abuse issues, I try to get them to go into APRA to be assessed through APRA.
What's APRA?
Oh my goodness.
Or just what sort of services do they give?
Right.
I don't know that.
They will do an assessment, and they can direct you to inpatient care or to outpatient care, okay. Depending on what your level of need is through the assessment. Mm-hmm. The young man I spoke about earlier who went from the shelter to transitional had to go through APRA to be cleared that he was not under any influences of drugs or alcohol before he went into the transitional program. So they do referrals into transitional housing as well.
APRA is the city's substance intake center for substance use and getting people connected to services in the community.
Can anyone just go there for help?
Yes.
Yes.
They open at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday.
Oh, wow.
And first come, first served. And you can be there for upwards of 2 to 2.5 hours to complete the assessment.
Okay.
So it's on a walk-in basis. You don't have to make an appointment.
So I know that you also help customers who are in the process of getting out of being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
You guys employ strategies to helping them find housing, mm-hmm. more permanent housing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe tell us more about that?
It's really, I'll just jump in. This is Jean. You know, getting people permanent housing in the city can be really tough, but the city has a more coordinated effort now to connect people experiencing homelessness with different resources for permanent housing. Jerome mentioned permanent supportive housing. There's also different kinds of voucher programs in place. The service providers who are doing outreach and working directly with people experiencing homelessness all now use what's called the coordinated entry system. So people are put into sort of a database for a system, and then their names are pulled.
Okay.
For housing, mm-hmm. based on length of time homeless, the people who are most vulnerable, something folks in the homeless services world talk about chronic homelessness, those who are most at risk, who have been homeless a long time, who might have some sort of debilitating illness that really puts them at risk of dying on the street. Mm. And the city is really focused on getting those folks into housing using what's called a housing first model, where people are housed first, and then when they're housed, then there are other services, mental health services, mm-hmm. substance use services, case management services, are available to them, rather than a system where you need to have gone through treatment, you need to have get mental health treatment, and then you can get into housing. So the city has changed the way it houses people. We're looking for the most vulnerable, those who've been homeless a long time, and trying to get people into housing first, and then supporting them in all of their recovery.
Yeah. Okay. How did the city decide to make these changes? What was it like before?
The city, you know, Housing First became a model probably about 10 years ago, and many cities have now decided that this is a best practice. The model was, as I said, that people would have to go into treatment, mental health treatment, be clean, be sober, make sure they're taking their medication. But you can imagine when you're sleeping on the street or in a shelter and your life is very chaotic, to manage all of that while homeless is very difficult. So it's just a lot cheaper, actually, for people to get into housing and then get services, as opposed to sleeping outside, not being housed, and going to the emergency room and getting locked up, and, you know, all these. It saves the city money by getting people into housing.
Yeah.
I want to go back to APRA.
Okay.
Addiction Prevention and Recovery Administration.
Got it.
And it's located at 75 P Street, Northeast.
Thank you, Jerome.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we can talk about, I guess, for our listeners, why might they care about these issues? Or why should they care about these issues? How does it affect us all in the city? That's a very broad question.
These are our neighbors.
Yeah. And homelessness can hit anyone.
That's true.
You could have a fire at your condo and become homeless.
Right.
Because all of your belongings and everything is taken away from you. And if you have not saved substantial amounts of money, you could be homeless overnight. So it serves us to, as Jean said, these are our neighbors, these are our brothers and sisters, that we see ourselves in their plight,
right,
that we be able to empathize with their situation. I used to live 6 blocks from the shelter I stayed in,
mm-hmm.
2-bedroom condo, had no idea that one day I would be living in that shelter. I couldn't even see it from the road. I didn't know. I just knew it was down there somewhere. And until I woke up that morning and stepped outside, I had no idea what it even looked like.
Right.
So if it could happen to me, it can happen to anyone.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. What might be some like misperceptions that people have?
That it's not going to happen to me.
Right, yeah.
that people who are homeless, are experiencing homelessness, are uneducated.
Mm-hmm.
On drugs.
Want to be mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm. Or it's their choice.
Not trying hard enough.
Don't want nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't want to work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When actually
they want to work.
Yeah, and many people living in shelter and some
work.
Who live on the street work.
Right.
But
true.
It's not enough. Yeah, it's just it's not enough. They're not able to make enough money to afford a place to live in the city.
Right.
And So they're forced, you know, to, people might have health problems that would, you know, they have bills that they can't pay mm-hmm. because of health problems, depression,
right?
You know, anything. And, you know, I think that it's an uncomfortable space for people. Well, how do I talk to someone who's experiencing homelessness? How do I engage with them? They're so different, and they're always sort of standing in the way. Or I think what's really important is that people feel like they can talk to people, have a conversation, hear their story. You know, you can begin to empathize and figure out how to help someone if you can really listen to their story.
Yeah, no, it's sometimes the difficulty part is just being able to talk about these topics. I heard on a different podcast once that if you can't speak about something, you can't think about it.
Right.
So if you begin to just speak about it, even if you might be wrong or don't know how to, you might, sometimes people are just scared of saying the wrong thing. But if you just start speaking, you can start thinking about it. What might be some strategies or ways that DC residents of any background can help or get involved?
Well, one of my favorite ways that someone can get involved in ending homelessness is getting involved with an advocacy organization called the Way Home Campaign. They do great work to try to encourage the city to put more resources into housing, permanent supportive housing, and other voucher programs that can really quickly move people off the street, out of shelter, and into housing. That's one of my favorite organizations.
And I think our neighbors in the community do a lot, especially the Christian community, are very active in assisting homeless population. I know when I was homeless, the Catholic Charities was very instrumental in lifting me up, not just giving me food and shelter, but spiritually. I think that I know my church, and I know a lot of churches are very helpful when it comes to feeding and clothing the homeless.
Yeah. And I think that you don't necessarily have to be in an organization to help.
No.
Right.
You know, you can go make sandwiches at home and go to the park and pass them out.
Right.
Me and my son did it for his birthday. We went to McDonald's and bought 44 hamburgers and 44 french fries. That's when it was a dollar. And we went down to the park and we just hand out hamburgers and french fries. And that made us feel good, and that put a smile on somebody else's face. I don't think you necessarily have to have an organization to help.
That's right.
Just the little things. Just to say hi.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say.
That, just to speak.
Right. Because, you know, so often, you know, when I'm moving about the city, you see people just walking by. They don't even recognize people sitting on the curb.
Right.
You know, elderly people, people in wheelchairs. People can just walk by and not even recognize them. And as Renee said, just say, hey, what's up? You know, how you feeling today?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I mean, I've seen interactions where someone who's in the street is at my engage someone else, and the automatic response is, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that, well, in this interaction, the person was like, what are you sorry about? I haven't asked you for anything. I was saying hello. So, I mean, having just saying the simple hello could make a lot of difference.
Yes. Yeah.
I also think, just to put a plug for the Coffee and Conversation program at the library, several of our branches host a monthly, bi-monthly coffee and conversation, and it's a time where people can just come together. It happens in the middle of the day. And it's a great way to connect with people in the library who are housed, who are not housed, to have those kinds of conversations, to get to know people, and to hear their story and know them as people. They're people first, they're housed or unhoused second.
Right. Yeah, and they're definitely people first. And in talking to a lot of homeless people, I've gotten to learn so much more about the city and the city's history and its culture. But we're almost close to the end of the show. So if you guys have any last word, feel free to say it. Or we can also just share the shelter hotline number. I think this is it.
Yes. Let's share. That's a great idea. Let's share the shelter hotline number. It is 202-399-7093. Or you can just call 311, and if you know someone who needs access to a shelter, transportation to a shelter, you just tell them where you're at with someone or where the person is at, and they'll come by. They also do checks on people who are staying outside, so if someone is choosing not to go in, they can also, they'll bring them a blanket, they'll bring them gloves, and sort of just do a safety check. Okay.
And also, if there are homeless people who you know of who are living outside in your neighborhood, this would be a great opportunity to get rid of that extra blanket that you have at your house, or to take out some hot soup or something, just to let people know that they're cared for and loved.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Well, guys, thank you for being on the show today.
It's
been a lot
me.
Of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been an episode of the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasted live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Visit the library at dclibrary.org. Follow us at DC Public Library on Instagram and at DCPL on Twitter. Subscribe to this show wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.